handicap parking space.
That could be housing discrimination. And the only way to stop it is to report it so we can investigate it.
Please call Fair Housing Napa Valley at 707-224-9720 or visit us at napafairhousing.org for more information.
Matthews Mattress, your family and locally owned mattress store on Soskal Avenue in Napa, is your only source for Tempur-Pedic beds in the Napa Valley. And they have a large selection of brand name mattresses for you to try out in the most relaxing showroom you'll ever see. When you visit Matthews Mattress, you'll find the experience of buying a bed so much easier than you expect. They have free delivery, and if you buy by 5, you're sleeping by 9 o'clock on your new mattress.
Hi, this is Dustin. Come see me at Matthews Mattress on Soskal Avenue. We're your hometown mattress store since 1991.
A&W Restaurant is hiring now. If you are currently working in the fast food industry, listen up. Take a short drive up Valley and work at one of the busiest A&Ws in the country. Earn $15 an hour, full or part-time. They will work with your schedule. Going to school or working another job? Set your own hours. They're looking for people who love a fast-paced work environment. Apply online or in person at the A&W Restaurant in St. Helena. Start your new job tomorrow.
You're listening to 1440 KVON, the voice of Napa Valley. Here's your host, Barry Martin.
And again, welcome back. It's the morning show for Wednesday, September 5th, 9 minutes after 8 o'clock now. And to recap that traffic message that we mentioned a few minutes ago, troubles continue on Highway 29. It is in the Wine Country Avenue vicinity where the problems continue. There is an incident that caused a power line to fall early this morning and ended up with both lanes of southbound 29 closed and one lane of northbound 29 closed at the beginning of the problem. I don't have specifics on lane closures right now, but what the Napa police are advising is that we avoid Highway 29 between Trower and Salvador right now. The crew's out there waiting for the utility company to fix the broken problem, the broken transmission line problem, and there is no estimated time of completion. So for the morning drive, just plan to avoid that area, Highway 29 between Trower and Salvador. Apparently both directions affected, so find yourself an alternate route this morning if you can. Weather-wise, we're looking at highs today ranging from about 77 in the cooler parts of Napa up to about 83 in the warmer parts. Tomorrow similar, and then we warm up on Friday, 10 to 12 degrees warmer across the board, but not for long. Saturday and Sunday will start cooling down again. Very short-term warm-up expected just on Friday. That is the situation with traffic and the weather. Also have a collision being reported now on Highway 29 at Robert Louis Stevenson Park, north end of Napa County. That just came on the screen. And before we move on, a quick check of the markets. NASDAQ still struggling today. Tech stocks taking a bit of a beating. And the NASDAQ is off 109 points. That's 1.3%. S&P is down about half of a percentage point. And the Dow is approaching flat after a down start this morning. You are up to date on traffic, markets, and the weather. It's now 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. We are fortunate to have joining us in studio this morning State Senator Bill Dodd, who just finished an intense last couple of weeks of the legislative session in Sacramento. Thank you for being here in studio this morning.
Oh, my pleasure.
You got a chance to talk some more about the issue you've been talking about nonstop for many weeks now, which, of course, our first topic to focus on, the aftermath of last year's fires, what's going to happen with PG&E. You co-chaired this committee dealing with this issue, and it became your focus for a couple of months, right? More than a couple of months?
Well, actually, it was it only seemed like that. It was about 4 weeks.
4 weeks. Maybe
perhaps 4.5 weeks. It was a special session conference committee called by the governor, and he selected one of my bills, SB 901, to be the vehicle to carry whatever we did. And he had language in that bill, frankly, that would have been far more permissive for PG&E type of things to make sure that, going forward, there were more consideration for like things like climate change and in how we evaluate who's at fault in these episodes. Mm-hmm.
So now we're approaching a year since the horrible fires here in the North Bay, and the question has been all through this period of time, A, was PG&E liable? Was it their fault that these power lines went down, the fires were started? That was answered with a yes on at least a significant portion of the fires. Yes, it was PG&E equipment that caused the fires. Historically, they were then liable for damage as a result of their equipment. Your bill, the one that has passed as of last Friday night, does it change that precedent now?
Well, no. The governor wanted to eliminate inverse condemnation. Number one, we really couldn't have done that because it was it's a state constitutional amendment. He really believed that we could have modified it. Right now, it's a no fault situation. So let's just say, give you an example: if a car runs into a telephone pole, and the power line comes down and burns out down a whole subdivision. Well, it's obviously that guy that's driving the car, drunk driver, whatever. But no, when it comes to our utilities, because they have the right of eminent domain, our utilities by state constitution have to take care of everything. It's total it's a no-fault system.
Right.
So at any rate, and then what they would do is then go back after everything was paid off and then go back to the CPUC for a hearing. The CPUC has the ability to say, okay, we get it. This is not caused by youth or any of your fault. So now we'll pass all these costs on to the ratepayers. And I really think that's not fair. But at the end of the day, that's got to be something that's a ballot initiative that has to be changed, or it's just going to languish in court. Mm-hmm. So I think what we did is we also didn't think the PG&E had shown enough progress in terms of what they do in protecting people. We saw what happened on October 8th. We saw that there were charges in 11 of 16 fires that the CAL FIRE believed that PG&E was negligent. And we didn't think that, frankly, they deserved that was really the feeling of the conference committee. So we go back, and I remember telling you about our goals and all this. We have to do everything we can to make sure that we protect victims so that we don't victimize them again. They have to be made whole because this fire was none of their fault. We also want to make sure that we protect ratepayers the best that we possibly can going forward. We also understand that there were this summer 15, 16 fires that weren't started by our electrical grid. So we have a big problem in the state of California with too much fuels. And so what we were able to do, so what we needed to do is to have a better environment to try to prevent these type of bigger events. And then suppression is very important, to pre-position fire assets so that we don't we don't go from a 1,000-acre fire to a 100,000-acre fire. And I think that the other thing is we need to make sure that we had the money behind it, because you can talk all day long, but if you don't have the resources behind it, you're in trouble. And then finally, it is a goal for all our investor-owned utilities to remain financially viable and healthy. And if they're not financially viable and healthy, then what happens? Their credit rating goes down, and by statute, the CPUC passes all those costs onto ratepayers. So we really believe that even without the governor's inverse, there was enough in the bill to have us be able to hit all those goals. And I really think we hit the sweet spot in, the special session was 3.5 weeks. That's what it was, 3.5 weeks. And in that time period, I think we hit the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. So you believe this is a good bill, and you've supported it all along. You support its final form.
Well, yes. Let's not make any mistake about it. you know, if we had had 6 months or something, and people are talking about, hey, how do we break up PG&E? Is that possible? Those type of things couldn't even be considered in 3.5 weeks.
Right.
We were never going to get there. So what we needed to do is we needed to have an approach that hit all those goals. And one of the things that I was very concerned about, particularly even in the negotiations between the Senate and the Assembly, is that perhaps victims could have been victimized, you know, once again, where all of a sudden, you know, if we hadn't acted, I believe that this week PG&E would have gone into junk bond status, and all of a sudden you would have had a situation where everybody's PG&E bill would have gone up $12 a month, and that's, you know, almost $150 a year. And then at the same time, that more than likely, the analysts were telling us, analysts that were both short and long on PG&E were telling us that bankruptcy would follow not long after. And as I thought about 6,600 people that had their houses burned down and all the cities and the counties in this area that have so many expenses and damages, that was unacceptable for them not to be able to recover if PG&E went out.
Mm-hmm. So the outcome could have been for those filing claims against PG&E in court that they'd end up, if they went into bankruptcy, if you're lucky, 10 cents on the dollar or some kind of future settlement or maybe nothing.
Well, you know, probably something. You know, the concern was right now they're going to recover. They've settled in many cases with insurance companies, but the insurance companies settle. And then if they're underinsured, the homeowners can go back to PG&E.
And the key question now is anything in your bill blocking individuals from pursuing lawsuits against PG&E for uninsured losses?
No, nothing. We wanted to make sure that victims have the right to recover 100% of their losses and damages. I think that in a bankruptcy situation, what it would have done is it would have made it a longer process as it winds through the courts. And who knows whether it had been 70 cents on the dollar, 50 cents on the dollar. I don't know, right. But it would have been less.
And the calculation, just to reset the parameters and understand this, there was talk of $15 billion in liability on PG&E's part. Their liability insurance was less than a billion, right?
That's correct.
So they had 15 times the liability than they were insured for, which almost guarantees they would have, you know, gone through some tremendous financial difficulty of some kind.
It's my understanding that they have $15 billion of damage, and their market cap is something like $18 to $20 billion. So, yeah, that's not too good. Plus, you know, once again, when their credit rating goes over the top to junk bond status, all their expenses.
And you mentioned to me off the air that the concern was that PG&E in bankruptcy or receivership or something was then vulnerable to being taken over by people who would want to play the market with the utility company. Is that accurate?
Right. You know, and I've heard both sides of this story. There were certainly short sellers that wanted, you know, hedge funds that would have liked to have picked up the pieces. That's kind of another thing that we've done so that we don't have to go through this again, is we've set statutes in place going forward that protect employees, that protect contracts, so that those things cannot happen. Well, I was really pleased, you know, in the negotiations, and the governor did a phenomenal job there, you know, at the 11th hour. That so that somebody couldn't come in and say, "Hey, these guys, all these employees are making X." You know, I'm talking about line employees now and all the expertise. And so all of a sudden trying to bring new people in at lower salaries, and then also the contracts, the renewable contracts that we have, solar, wind, and geothermal, those contracts would have been off the table and had to be totally renegotiated. So we've been able to deal with that. One thing we did do, because we really felt like if the ratepayers and you know, the dialogue now is everybody's going to share in the cost. We don't know. What we did is set up a framework. And so at the end of the day, what's going to happen is there's going to be a complete financial scrub, if you will, a forensic audit of PG&E's books. Every single dollar that PG&E has anywhere in their company will be brought to bear in the same short of financial insolvency. So the first people in will be PG&E. They'll have skin in the game. And then that amount that cannot be funded will be funded at the rate of, you know, what it is, it's about $5 a month for every $1 billion. So using the example, we heard from experts, they thought that the max after settlements of different companies and everything would be about $5 billion that would end up coming from ratepayers. So that's $25 a year, about $2 a month. So I've already told you, in insolvency, junk bond status, the rates go up $12 a month, or $144 a year. So we felt like it was a good trade-off. But the other thing we did is, as long as the ratepayers had to have skin in the game on something that was clearly PG&E's fault, we put a provision in the bill that there'd be no executive compensation, salaries, bonuses, perks that would ever come from ratepayers. That has to be paid from the shareholder side. And I know they were not happy about that at all, but I just felt like it was something that we need to send a message to their management. I mean, you see all these wonderful commercials and everything about how great they're doing. Well, I hope they are. It's, you know, at the end of the day, I really hope they are, because our communities will be safer. But I hope it's more than just window dressing that we see from time to time.
Mm-hmm. This has been a difficult issue, to say the least. You've taken some flack over it. Speak to that a little bit.
Well, you know, even up front, my some of my staff members in Sacramento said, "Man, you got an election in 2 years, and are you sure you want to do this?" And you know, I really felt like when the governor called my bill as the bill to be the vehicle. And two, the Senate pro tem, President pro tem, Tony Atkins, asked me to be the chairman for the Senate side of the committee. That, you know, I could be in Sacramento for 12 years and never get an opportunity to lead, to really understand the issues and do it. And, you know, I just felt like it was an honor, and I felt like it was something that hopefully people, my constituents, could trust me to do the right thing. And there's
thank you.
There's all sorts of conjecture out there about different motivations. You know, again, I told you those five or six goals that we had, those were the 5-6 goals going in, and coming out, I really believe that we hit the sweet spot. Mm-hmm. That said, people are angry, and you know they should be angry, but I don't think the anger should be focused at the legislators. I am so proud, you know, in this political environment, charged environment that we're in today in the United States of America, when you look at Washington, D.C., I don't know when the last time you saw a bipartisan vote. And these fires and our utilities health and all these things are not Republican and Democrat issues. We had bicameral, which is assembly and the Senate, and bipartisan votes, significant bipartisan. This isn't just one or two Republicans came along with the Democrats. This was widespread. I think in the Senate, it was 29-4. And in the assembly, I believe it was 49-7. And I think that says a lot mm-hmm. about the situation. When we first started down this road, you remember we were talking about Aaron Brockovich and the trial attorneys and the insurance companies and the cities and the counties. All these special interests were all against 901. When it was all said and done, we had very little opposition to this plan.
Mm-hmm. Who did still oppose it at the end?
Well, one of the main spokespersons that people have probably read about, Jerry Hill, who's down in San Mateo County. And of course I'll tell you, there is no person on the planet that hates PG&E worse than Jerry Hill. You know, having represented that county that had the San Bruno gas explosion. Mm-hmm. So I get his anger on it. But it's kind of, even though he's a good friend, I call him the ambulance chaser. Because anytime there's headlines, it's awful easy to be the Monday morning quarterback and say why we should have done this. And his statements were less than accurate, but nevertheless, I think it's also people that are just, for whatever reason, I think the others were from Southern California, mm-hmm. and just, are generally nose on everything. And we have those too.
I think the undercurrent and some of the comments that you see in social media and so on, and I'm sure you've seen these directed to you as well, is that it's a sellout to big business, that it's favoring corporations over individuals, and it's not a decision or a process that thinks about the people, but thinks about companies, stockholders, and political contributors. I'm sure you've heard a bunch of that.
Well, I have, and. We all take that very, very seriously. I mean, one of the comments that Jerry Hill said, did Exxon get a government bailout when they had the Gulf of Mexico problem? Well, the reality is no, they didn't. They did it themselves. But at the same time, we're all paying for that at the pump. And so, it's as broad as it is long. At the end of the day, again, I believe that we protected ratepayers to the best extent that we could. The numbers show it. We probably saved ratepayers, in the neighborhood of $100 a month of what it would have been on the ground, between now and the end of the year, and then who knows beyond that. And also, these electrical utility companies. It's not just PG&E. It's Southern California Edison, San Diego Gas and Electric. The other thing we did is we put policies in place that. Absolutely mandate that they do a better job of undergrounding, shutting off power. You saw the article in the Napa Register this mm-hmm. morning about PG&E just deciding to put all these weather stations in. Well, that was the substance of my SB 901.
Yeah, I read that on the air a while ago, and I had a feeling it was connected.
When I first brought it out in January, they were opposed to it. Mm-hmm. And then as they saw the momentum, they knew it was going to pass. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, they started embracing it.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, San Diego Gas and Electric started doing this after their 2007 fires. And they've really done a great job. They've powered down the grid 17 times, since 2007. Mm-hmm. And it's really worked. Their grid has not caused a fire since then. And I think that's the standard that we should expect from our utilities. So I truly believe, even though the dialogue you read in the paper, because it sells papers too, mm-hmm. let's face it, political contributions of that kind, PG&E hired almost every available lobbyist in Sacramento during this time period. But the reality is, I believe the legislature, regardless of contribution, I haven't taken, by the way, I think it's important to note because people may be thinking, I had received my last contribution from PG&E was something like in August of 2017. So when I knew that these fires happened, they wanted to contribute to different fundraisers, and we just said, no, I'm sorry, we're going to have to be involved in this because this is, the area in which I live. And so, I think a lot of legislators, particularly in Northern California, felt that same way. And while it's always out there, I really believe we do the right things for the right reasons. And in this particular case, again, going back to the five goals, it was appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Folks will be watching to see, however, in the aftermath of this, will you accept contributions from PG&E in the future?
Yeah, that is a really good, not for the foreseeable future. And my future, I have one more term to serve. I don't really think I need to do that. So, I don't have any hard and fast rules, but I understand propriety and appearances. And so, mm-hmm. I have no intentions of taking anything from PG&E.
We're talking with State Senator Bill Dodd. And of course, as you've heard in the last week, the legislative special session ended. There was a bill that was passed. That's what we've been discussing. And we come back after a little break here. I'd like to talk a little bit more about what would have happened if you just let PG&E collapse? Because that's an interesting line to follow and to help understand all sides of the story. So we'll come back with State Senator Dodd in just a couple of minutes. Right now, a quick break for some news and sports.
I'm Nate Campbell, updating you on some stories we are following in the KVON newsroom. It's a story we've been following and reporting to you, and now another Napa restaurant getting some outside attention. Fume the restaurant, now Fume the pot delivery service, confusing many of you. Terry Letson with the 16-year-old bistro and bar.
I say about 25% of the comments think we are Fume cannabis. Fume means smoke, which obviously is a connection to a dispensary and the cannabis, and that's one of the reasons we chose the name, because it was a culinary term of smoke in our wood-burning oven, and a wine coined by Robert Mondavia is Fume.
Letson suggests that the pot company add a tagline to help with some of the confusion. CHP cracking down on distracted driving over the past Labor Day weekend. So, how did everyone do? Officer Mark Rentsberger.
We did all right. We had 12 DUI arrests over the weekend in Napa CHP, which was on par with last year. No major crashes where people were injured. No fatality. Nobody died. I think we had one motorcycle crash, which is really good considering Labor Day weekend. But the lake...
Rentsberger says the rest of the Bay Area didn't do as well as Napa. Harvest in full effect in the wine country, lots of good grapes, but a shortage of workers. Wildfires creating more construction jobs, making for some interesting business times here in Napa.
These are better paying jobs, they're more secure, they're year round. And the whole rebuilding of the Napa Sonoma economy is moving workers away from farm work into these better paid construction jobs.
That's Michael Burnick, former director of the California Labor Department. Napa in the North Bay, you are up to date. I'm Nate Campbell. That's the news. Your Napa Valley and North Bay news is brought to you by Computer Engineering Group. They can fix your broken screen on your iPhone or Samsung. CEG also repairs Apples or PCs in store or at your home. They even provide IT services for your business. Call 833-CEG-9701.
It's big game for cross country today. This is a sports report with Ira C. Smith. Napa High against the Vintage Crushers out at Alston Park today, as they have both JV and varsity action in that cross country meet. In water polo, in both boys and girls action, Vintage opening the season at home against Oakdale at the Crusher Pool. And tomorrow, the Vintage Crusher freshman football team travels to Wilsey Wood in Vacaville, where they'll play in that new stadium there at Wilsey Wood High School. And then Friday night, it's the Hall of Fame game at Memorial Stadium, Vintage hosting Bellarmine of San Jose, with their Hall of Fame inductees to be honored the following night with a dinner. Also, coming up on Friday night, Justin Sienna will be hosting Hercules, the game that will be broadcast on KVYN. American Canyon will be at Wilsey Wood on Friday night, and Calistoga is at Upper Lake. Napa High plays Reardon of San Francisco on Saturday night. We'll broadcast that game on KVON beginning at 6:45 on Saturday night. Tonight, it's Oakland A's baseball. The A's close out that three-game series against the New York Yankees. Fires gets the start for the A's, 7 o'clock airtime for the broadcast on KVON. Also tonight, the San Francisco Giants are closing out their three-game series at Colorado against the Rockies. Suarez, the starting pitcher in that game. Both the A's and the Giants are idle tomorrow.
This is Auntie Dorothy, Dorothy Salmon, and today in the Napa Valley on 1440 KVON. You'll be listening to local leaders who are very important to your past, your present, and your future, and all the great things that are happening here in our valley. Join me on Monday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1440 AM KVON. Today in the Napa Valley. Be engaged.
Wherever you go, just tell your smart speaker to play KVON, the voice of Napa Valley.
And we are back. It is 8:36 now at KVON. Let's take a look and see if there's anything new to say about the Highway 29 problem. I think the answer to that question is no. Napa Police Department advising all to avoid Highway 29 between Trower and Salvador right now. They had a power line down early this morning, and utility company responding to that. As we sit here talking about PG&E, they're in the news a couple of different ways this morning. So that situation continues. No change in the situation as far as traffic is concerned over there. I'm Barry Martin, and we're talking in this hour with State Senator Bill Dodd, who was kind enough to join us here this morning live in the studio following the conclusion of the special session that ended late Friday night. It went right down to the wire, and you finally got a vote on your bill 901, and that's been our focus of attention here this morning. Thinking back over the course of a long stretch of time, and the first time this maybe came up was when Chrysler was bailed out way back in the day. I don't know how many years we're going back for that one. And people said, why should the government slash the taxpayers help out a company that failed? You know, they didn't have good foresight. They didn't manage their business correctly. Now we're bailing them out. Time and time again, this has happened. We had the savings and loan industry crisis, and then most recently, all the financial institutions that sort of brought on the big recession with their bad lending practices. And then we heard that phrase, too big to fail. Right? Then the government has to step in and save these companies, because if they fail, it costs society too much somehow. Was that a conversation around this with PG&E, leading to the question of what if you had done nothing and just let PG&E go through whatever it was going to go through financially? As you said, there was a potential for ratepayers to see an increase, but perhaps the long game, the outcome would have been better at some point, some people might say. What's the thinking around that? What was the conversation like?
Well, yeah, absolutely. That was a big part of the conversation. I don't think the words too big to fail came across, but I think that's a good analogy. But unlike absolutely private companies like Chrysler or the savings and loans, where they had a nexus to them failing and the number of jobs that were going to go down and the number of people that would have been impacted financially, certainly was a concern for us. But publicly owned utilities, or investor-owned utilities in this particular case, are inextricably linked by law already to ratepayers. And the last time the PG&E went bankrupt, I believe it was in early 2000 timeframe, almost two decades ago, the ratepayers ended up paying everything, because a judge in a bankruptcy proceeding does not represent ratepayers. And the judge, really, his consideration is only for the creditors. And this is what we're being told. I'm not an attorney. But we had experts in the room. We had a wonderful expert from Stanford University that talked to us and advised us quite a bit on this issue. But we looked at that. And the last time PG&E went bankrupt, who invests in utilities? Everyone thinks all these shareholders. These shareholders, right today, there's 1.6 million senior citizens that are shareholders of a utility. Mm-hmm. And older people that are retired, people that need fixed or on fixed incomes, generally will invest in a safe investment. They don't make a lot of money, but they have a good return. They have dividends every single year. They're generally a safe investment. And then also many pensions funds that don't want to invest in risky businesses do that. So the last time around, senior citizens got pummeled. People, their life savings perhaps, or a good chunk of it, was lost, and retirement funds lost a lot of money. And then when they reorganized, because of their credit rating in the past, they reorganized at a very low number. Everybody that got in on the new gig made a ton of money. And this is the way these markets can be manipulated. Mm-hmm. Is really frightening in many respects. So we really believe at the end of the day we did the best thing. A reorganization of a utility like this probably is next to impossible. But what we did is we're going to be appointing a blue ribbon committee, which I hope to have academics like Professor Wara from Stanford and others to look into these type of situations for us, to try to get a handle on what type of things that we can, what are the range of things we can do in the future going forward with our utilities. Mm-hmm. And of course, embodied in this bill is they've got to have plans to make the grid more resilient, new reclosures, new types of telephone pole, you know, power poles, all these different things that will, you know, prevent these type of events. But you've also got to look at climate change and its impact on these events. It's pretty hard for me to believe that anybody could have thought about 80 to 85 mile an hour winds. Apparently, the requirements, not apparently, I know this to be true, are somewhere in the PUC has a rating of 50 to 55 miles an hour wind that their wires are supposed to be able to withstand. Now, they are supposed to trim within 4 feet of those wires. And, you know, I think that's where, you know, and it's kind of amazing. I don't know what it is, 1,500 miles or something of lines that they have. All you need to do is blow it in, you know, 1%, and you're in trouble.
Yeah, it's a gargantuan task.
But we talked about this off the air. I'm not at all satisfied with the oversight that the California Public Utilities Commission has there. They have 30 people to oversee all these utility plans, safety plans for three major utilities in the state of California. That's nowhere near enough. And they could have 30 just for PG&E alone, and it might not be enough, you know, to be inspecting. In this day and age, with drones, cameras and everything, they can go and do inspections, and they should be. And I think they've while PG&E has not been a good actor in this regard, their day in court is going to come, and we're going to learn a lot more.
Yeah.
You know, Cal Fire only opines in terms of where they saw an ignition point, but they're going to have the opportunity to talk more about, you know, what happened. But seriously, the CPUC has to step up their game. And also, you'll be seeing some bills next year to mandate that.
I want to take a circuitous route to my next question, but this is my latest axe to grind, and I'm really interested in pursuing this to understand it better and see if what I'm thinking makes any sense. There's a lot of people, as you know, who will say, you know, government can't do anything right. Anything government touches, they'll mess it up, right? I've never subscribed to that. And I always point as an example to the fact that if you ask the community right here in Napa what agencies they respect the most, they'll say police and fire every single time, right? Very high reputation, not just here, but in many communities. Those are government entities. Those are not private companies. They're not hybrids of private and public, right? They're public agencies. Things like water that we essentially rely on, generally delivered by public agencies.
So flood control.
Flood control, another great example. When there's a profit motive, profit will be the goal. And that's what happens with PG&E and with other companies and a lot of criticism that's come in. So that leads me obviously to the question, will the legislature have conversation about whether these public-private connections for utility companies, the way they are now, is the best way for the future, or would we be better off to bite the bullet and make utility energy provision a government function where you have direct oversight by your elected officials of government agency? Isn't energy too important of a thing? Police and fire protection are awfully important. They're government agencies. Why not utilities?
Well, that was we had one of our hearings where we had representatives from investor-owned utilities, and the very next panel we had publicly-owned utilities. And it's kind of, you know, one of the things that public utilities that are owned by the local municipalities, SMUD is a great example, Sacramento Municipal Utilities District. If they had the same event happen, there would have been no need for bonds or anything else, although there could have been. But the reality is, 100% of all those costs are borne by ratepayers. So anytime there's a problem, and we've seen it around here, your water rates go up because
special water districts right here in Napa County. Right?
That's right.
You've dealt with that extensively.
New requirements come up from the state or the federal government, and they need the money to pay for it. The only way to get that money is from ratepayers. So, you know, while I agree with the examples that you've given, in many cases, there's no other way of doing it. I think that government, when we talk about government doesn't do a lot of things right, I kind of subscribe maybe halfway there. Just in my experience, I've seen, you know, with the San Francisco Bay Bridge and the, and even though I was on, you know, the Bay Area Toll Authority then, I was railing on it. That's why we were able to get a new partnership and move Caltrans instead of them being the sponsor of the project. We brought two other agencies in and did a much better job. The high-speed rail, the water fix, all these things that are billions and billions of dollars. In many respects, the new norm throughout our world in terms of infrastructure projects are being done by public-private partnerships. So that what we need to do is we need to transfer the risk from people, the government. So in these cases, like with the high-speed rail, who pays for that? Well, the state government is paying for those overruns. In this particular case, you know, we're dealing with an investor-owned utility. They generally handle all those costs. And the one thing that we have, and we still have, by the way, is the CPUC being the stopgap in terms of rate increases. The other thing that I'm confident on, some people will say, well, you know what you guys did is you capped exposure for the shareholders and you didn't put a cap on the ratepayers. Well, not so, because the CPUC, while any of these funds are securitized and ratepayers are paying for any of this problem for the 2017 fires, the CPUC still has the power when they're determining future rate increases to say, hey, you're making a little bit, you know, you're doing way better now. You're making 20% net operating profits. We're not going to give you this rate increase because, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, $2 a month is going to, you know, to pay for your mistakes in the past. We're not going to award. We're going to knock down your request for rates. Kind of a circuitous way around.
Sure, sure. It's an interesting conversation. I like trying to think it through. Let's talk a little bit for a moment about one of the other aspects of sort of the unintended consequences. If the legislature had decided to let PG&E fall apart or do whatever it was going to do, there was a lot of concern about the carbon goals for the state and how inextricably linked PG&E and other utilities are to those goals, right? That was a concern. Is that a legitimate concern?
I think it's a legitimate concern. As I mentioned, you know, before, PG&E was about ready to get downgraded to junk bond status mm-hmm. this week. Mm-hmm. Had we not acted, I believe that to be so. All the contracts for solar, all the renewable contracts that are out there that extend out 10 years. First of all, until a judge had determined what would happen with those contracts, the rates would have gone up, as I said earlier, $12 a month for every single person just to handle contractually the new cost. By statute, the CPUC has to pass those through to ratepayers. So that was a big concern. And then as a judge determines, you know, what do we do going forward on all those contracts? So our ability to meet our renewable portfolio standards was really in jeopardy. Mm-hmm.
Again, our guest, State Senator Bill Dodd. We're talking about Bill 901, Senate Bill 901?
Senate Bill 901.
Which did pass last Friday and resets the playing field, as it were, for PG&E and all of those involved. And to recap, and to people who might have tuned in late in the program, this does not change PG&E's liability in court for people who were victimized in last October's fires, who are going to sue for uninsured losses.
That's correct.
That does not impact that.
That was a major factor in doing what we did.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of an odd question. We've just got a few minutes left. But what else in this bill or in other things that you've been working on is significant that we should hear about this morning before we run out of time?
Well, I think that, you know, we did put our money where our mouth is. We allocated $200 million a year to these programs. That's over 5 years. That's $1 billion. That's something that This bill would not have gone forward had we had not had the money in it.
Programs being suppression and the other things you talked about.
Yeah, suppression, and then also, you know, making sure that we have healthier forests without so much fuel. We have right now, I think it's 119 million dead and dying trees in the, you know, in the Sierras, mm-hmm. that are, you know, carbon emitters and that are just a tinderbox, you know, waiting to happen. And when you take a look at our air quality, what's happened with all these fires, you know, it is a serious problem.
Mm-hmm. Is there a market for the dead and dying trees? You know, it's a dead pine tree is not something you make lumber out of.
We were able to save the biomass plants. We got the biomass plants contract extended, which would have never happened without this. So that they have a place to take these things that aren't, you know, good for something else. But obviously there's, you know, new industries that are spawning that, mm-hmm. you know, there are products that can be made from some of this. And mm-hmm. that's the hope going forward.
There's a concern among some people that what will happen is a new heyday of logging, that there'll be a lot of logging companies wanting to get contracts to take trees out, not for necessarily fire suppression, but again, for profit. Is that a possibility?
Well, basically we cap the size of the trees. Nobody, I mean, the processes, CEQA and NEPA, that's the National and the California Environmental Quality Act. I think on smaller properties, those rules and regulations are going to be streamlined. For commercial logging, it's the same process that are in. But make no mistake about it. A lot of the problem is because we haven't logged. Mm-hmm. And commercial logging, what we're finding out now, is not all bad as long as there is a good environmental process. But we have to account for fire, because when you have so many trees that are stuck together, those fires, when they're up in the canopy, which is what happened around here, you can't put it out. I mean, it just, with particularly with the 80-mile-an-hour winds. But if you can thin those forests, and the fire stays in the underbrush, those are the type of fires that can be fought and won't be a 100,000-acre fire, maybe a, you know, 2,000 or 10,000-acre fire, and yeah. We've done a better job.
I think if you paid attention over the last, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years, when you're driving, and you know how it is, you get accustomed to your local surroundings, you don't pay attention. But drive out of the county, drive up to Tahoe, drive up north, and just pay attention to how many dead trees there are. It wasn't like that 20 years ago. I know the bark beetle was a big problem for the pine trees.
All brought up because of the drought, mm-hmm. not getting enough water, so the bark beetle could attack it.
Yeah, and it's dramatic in some areas. You just see entire fields, acres and thousands of acres of dead trees, and that doesn't make sense in terms of fire suppression, for sure.
But I'll tell you what, I want to give a shout out to the Sierra Club, particularly the Nature Conservancy. Normally, they would not go support a bill like this. I don't think the Sierra Club did support it ultimately, but they didn't really vigorously oppose it because they saw the greater good. The Nature Conservancy supported SB 901, and you know, that took a lot of courage. Yeah. But I think that we put provisions in there that made them feel comfortable. This wasn't going to be anything that it would create a new day for clear cutting and those type of things.
Right. Very good. So session has ended, and you got a little time off now. So what does that mean, and when do you resume, and what's your priority when you go back?
Well, I've got 2 months before I take you know, my Marion and I are going to take some time a week and get away.
A whole week
yeah. At the end of October, but I need to be in the district right now, September and October. I've got 4 district offices, and so I'll be having office hours in there and attending local events, because as I've been in Sacramento, you know, now I've got 22 cities and 6 counties that I represent, and I have people say, "Where's Bill?" So I got to be out there, and you know, I do enjoy it a lot. I am very, very fortunate. I have a lot of legislators that are very jealous of the district that I'm able to serve. And it is, you know, everything from full-on agriculture, you know, the Solano County, where you've got big breweries and manufacturing, the beautiful Napa Valley, the beautiful Sonoma Valley, And then all Yolo County, which is really the breadbasket of Northern California in terms of agriculture, and a really a lot of great people and small communities throughout District 3.
But it's mainly the wine that they envy, though. Come on.
Absolutely.
All right. State Senator Bill Dodd, thanks for being here today. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Barry.
And you'll be around the district. Are you campaigning for anyone?
I'll be working on Proposition 6. Let me just tell you real quick. This is the proposition that will repeal the gas tax. I've been doing transportation in Napa County when I was a supervisor for 14 years. And now over the last 4 years, I've served on the transportation committee. If the voters vote yes on Measure 6, Proposition 6, they will be hurting every city and county. Let me just, even with our local road tax that we have here, we've seen our roads and streets. This will be devastating, and there'll be more and more local taxes. The gas tax was 18.1 cents in 1991, and before we did it, it was still, last year, it was 18.1 cents. Mm-hmm. What we did is we increased it at the consumer price index level, up to today, which was 12 cents a gallon. It's nowhere near what the delta in terms of the increase of the gas prices are. But it will be devastating for every city and county in the state of California. The other, there's an affordable housing bond that I'm going to be working hard on. This is the issue of our time. If you want your kids, your grandkids to be able to live anywhere near you in this state, this is really important that we get involved. And there's another water bond. And so, you know, these are things that I think paying it forward. Mm-hmm. When you take a look at my parents' generation, Governor Brown's, you know, father was the, you know, the architect of our state water system and our road system and all these different things. My generation today hasn't really paid it forward like previous generations. And I think this is an opportunity for us to do that. So that's what I'll be working on. And I'm just darn glad I'm not working on my own election, but that'll come later.
All right. Thanks again for your time today.
Thank you.
8:59, we're all out of time for the morning show. Stay tuned, though. Lots more great radio coming your way right here on KVON. It's just about 9 o'clock. I'll talk to you tomorrow here on 1440.
Mercedes-Benz of Fairfield, your local Mercedes-Benz dealer. The very finest in cars, SUVs, vans, local staff, locally owned. You want to head in and get a car, you find Danny. He'll sell you a car. Todd's in charge of vans. Crystal will help you out in the boutique, my favorite spot to hang out. And Justin, of course, the head of all sales. All fantastic people, locals, locally owned. Our owner lives right here in the Napa Valley. And of course, Christmas is coming. And that means you could get in there now and get a mini Mercedes-Benz electric vehicle or maybe a sled. They have so much to offer and a brand new remodeled showroom like none you've ever seen before. Just 15 minutes across Jameson Canyon. Hit Highway 80 North. Jump off on Sassoon Parkway. And there you are. Head on in for a beautiful showroom full of beautiful people. It's Mercedes-Benz of Fairfield, your local Mercedes-Benz dealer.
We are KVON Napa.
This is Barry Martin. Join me weekdays for the KVON Morning Show.
This is a sports report with Ira C. Smith.
KVON Napa, 1440 AM.